while dancing the last quadrille with one of the boring young men whom it would not do to refuse, Kitty found herself face to face with Vronsky and Anna. She had not encountered Anna since the beginning of the ball, and now she suddenly saw her again in a different and unexpected light. She noticed that Anna was elated with success, a feeling Kitty herself knew so well. She saw that Anna was intoxicated with the admiration she had aroused. Knowing the feeling and the signs, she recognized them in Anna. She saw the quivering, flashing light in her eyes, the smile of happiness and excitement that involuntarily curved her lips, and the graceful sureness and ease of her movements. Who is the cause, she wondered. Is it all or only one?
I have danced more at Moscow at this one ball of yours than I have the whole winter in Petersburg, said Anna, looking round at Vronsky, who was standing beside her. I must rest before my journey.
So you really are going tomorrow?
Да, думаю, да. Yes, I think so.
Hello and welcome back to Cover to Cover. The first two podcasts that we made at Cover to Cover were about Tolstoy's great novel Anna Karenina. Well, today we are revisiting this story. You've just heard a short excerpt from part one, chapter 23, the chapter describing the ball in Moscow where, to Kitty's utter consternation, Anna and Vronsky end up dancing the mazurka together. The next day, the day after the ball, Anna returns by train to her husband and child in Petersburg, not knowing that Vronsky is on the same train.
Anna arranged herself for the journey. With small deft hands, she opened a red bag and took out a little cushion which she laid on her knees. She hooked a lamp onto the arm of her seat and took a paper knife and an English novel from her bag. She read attentively, but there was no pleasure in entering other people's lives and adventures. She was too eager to leave herself. She put down her book and leaned back in her seat, gripping the paper knife in both hands and ran through her recollections of her visit to Moscow. They were all good. They were all good and pleasant. She recalled the ball and Vronsky, and the look of slavish adoration in his eyes, recalled what had passed between them. There was nothing to be ashamed of. But just as she got to this point in her recollections, some inner voice seemed to say to her, Тепло, Анна. Очень тепло. Горячо. Warm. Very warm, Анна. Hot.
The terrible storm tore and shrieked between the wheels of the train and round the scaffolding at the corner of the station. Anna took another deep breath to get her fill of the fresh air and had just drawn her hand out of her muff to take hold of the handrail and get back into the carriage when another man wearing a military overcoat stepped close to her, shutting out the flickering light from the lamppost. She looked round and instantly recognized Vronsky. She had assured herself more than once during the last few days and again a moment ago that he was no more to her than any of the hundreds of identical young men one came across everywhere, and that she would never allow herself to bestow a thought on him. Yet in the first flash of seeing him again, a feeling of joyful pride swept over her. She had no need to ask why he was there. She knew it as well as if he had told her that he was there in order to be where she was.
I did not know you were traveling. What are you coming for?
And he replied, What am I coming for? You know that I have come to be where you are. I can't help myself.
At that moment, the wind sent the snow flying from the carriage roof and rattled a loose sheet of iron. In front, the hoarse whistle of the engine began to wail plaintively.
By the time we reach part 7 of the book, Anna is mother to a baby girl, the fruit of her love affair with Vronsky, but after many, many long months of trying, she has still not been able to obtain a divorce from Karenin. She is still separated from her son. She is still shut out from society and is feeling increasingly tense about her situation.
Allow us to dramatize for you Anna's final rite.
The weather was bright. A fine, drizzling rain had fallen all morning, but now it had cleared up. The iron roofs, the flagstones of the pavements, the cobbled roadway, the wheels, the leather, brass, and metalwork of the carriages all glistened brightly in the May sunshine. Vronsky jumped up, meaning to run after her, but on second thoughts, he sat down again, firmly setting his teeth and frowning. I've tried everything, he thought. The only thing left now is to take no notice. And he began getting ready to drive into town and then to his mother's to get her signature for the power of attorney.
He's coming. He'll be here soon. But how could he go away leaving me in such a state? How can he leave without making it up with me? Anna looked at the timetable in the daily paper. There was an evening train at 8:02. Yes, I must go to the railway station. And if I don't find him there, I must go to the house and catch him. Yes, I shall be in time. She gave orders for the horses to be put in the carriage
and busied herself packing a travel bag with the things she might need for a few days. She knew she would never return. She vaguely resolved on one of the plans that passed through her mind. After what would happen at the railway station or at the Countess's house, she would go on by the Nizhny line and stop at the first town she came to.
Dinner was on the table. She entered the room, but the smell of the bread and cheese, the whole idea of food revolted her. Вкус притупился. The zest is gone, as the English say. What did he look for in me? Not love, so much as the gratification of his vanity.
She remembered his words, the expression of his face, like a faithful setter's, in the early days of their liaison.
Yes, a success for his vanity. Of course there was love too, but the chief element was pride of success. He gloried in me. Now that is past. He has taken from me everything he could, and now I'm of no more use to him. He is tired of me and is trying not to act dishonorably towards me. Only yesterday he blurted out that he wants divorce and marriage so as to burn his boats. He loves me. He loves me, but how? The zest is gone. Yes, There is not the same flavor about me for him now. The zest is gone.
This was not surmise. She saw it distinctly.
My love grows more and more passionate and selfish while he is dying. And that is why we're drifting apart. There is no help for it. He is everything for me. And I demand that he give himself up to me entirely. But he wants to get further and further away from me. Before we were irresistibly drawn together, and now we are irresistibly drawn apart, and nothing can be done to alter it. He says I'm insanely jealous, and I have kept on telling myself, Anna, you're insanely jealous. Ты ужасна, ужасно ревнива. But it's not true. I'm not jealous. I am unsatisfied. But...
Her mouth dropped open, and she was so agitated by the sudden thought that came to her that she changed her place in the carriage.
If I could be anything but his mistress, passionately caring for nothing but his caresses, but I can't, and I don't want to be anything else. If he does not love me, but treats me kindly and gently out of a sense of duty, and what I want is not there, that would be a thousand times worse than having him hate me. It would be hell. And that's just how it is. It is. He has long since ceased to love me. And where love ends, hate begins. Анна, смотри, дома. Дома, дома, а в них все люди и люди, и все вы ненавидите друг друга. Сколько вас? Конца нет. People and people and more people, and all hating each other. What is it I want to make me happy? Ну, Анна. I get a divorce. Алексей Александрович lets me have Сережа, and I marry Вронский.
Thinking of Karenin, she immediately saw him before her with extraordinary vividness. The mild, lifeless, faded eyes, the blue veins in his white hands. She heard his intonations and the cracking of his finger joints. And remembering the feeling which had once existed between them, and which had also been called love, she shuddered with revulsion.
If I get divorced and become Vronsky's wife, what then? Can I imagine any new feeling between Vronsky and me? If not happiness, could there at least be absence of torment? No, no and no. Impossible. Life is sundering us. Мы жизнью расходимся. Он делает мое несчастье, а я его. I am the cause of his unhappiness and he of mine. And there is no altering him or me. Are we not all flung into the world for no other purpose than to hate each other and so to torture ourselves and one another? Сережа, I thought too that I loved him. Yet I have lived here without him. I exchanged him for another love and did not complain so long that the other love satisfied me.
As she made her way through the crowd to the first-class waiting room, Anna gradually recalled all the details of her situation and the plans between which she was wavering. And again, hope and despair in turn, chafing the old sores, lacerated the wounds of her tortured, cruelly throbbing heart. Sitting on the star-shaped sofa, waiting for her train, she looked with aversion at the people coming in and out. They were all objectionable to her. She thought of how she would arrive at the station and send him a note, and of what she would write, and of how he was at this moment complaining to his mother of his position, not understanding her sufferings, and of how she would enter the room and what she would say to him.
Then she thought of how life might still be happy and how wretchedly she loved and hated him and how dreadfully her heart was beating.
Rocked gently by the motion of the train, Anna inhaled the fresh air and continued the current of her thoughts.
Where did you leave off, Anna? I can't imagine a situation in which life is not a misery. We're all created in order to suffer, and we all know this, and all try to invent means for deceiving ourselves. But when you see the truth, what are you to do?
A woman sitting opposite her, obviously pleased with her phrase, said to her companion, "Men have been given the power of reason so that they can escape from their troubles."
"To escape from their troubles? Yes, I am very troubled, and I must escape. I must escape. Why not put out the candle when there is nothing more to see, when everything looks obnoxious? But how? Why are those men in the next carriage making so much noise? Why do they talk? Why do they laugh? Everything is false and evil, all lies and deceit."
When the train stopped at the station, Anna got out with a crowd of other passengers. Shunning them, she stood still on the platform, trying to remember why she had come and what it was she had intended to do. Porters rushed up, offering their services. Young men stamped their heels on the planks of the platform, talking in loud voices and staring at her. The people that tried to get out of her way always dodged to the wrong side. She stopped a porter and asked him if there was a coachman somewhere with a note from Count Vronsky.
She tore open the note and her heart contracted before she had even read it.
"Very sorry, your note did not catch me. I shall be back at 10.
"Very sorry, your note did not catch me. I shall be back at 10. No. I won't. I won't let you make me miserable. I won't."
A goods train was approaching.
Anna looked into the shadow of the truck at the mixture of sand and coal dust which covered the rails. There, in the very middle, I escape from everyone and from myself. There, in the very middle, and I will punish him and escape from everyone and from myself.
She wanted to fall halfway between the wheels of the front truck, which was drawing level with her. But the red bag which she began to pull from her arm delayed her, and it was too late. The truck had passed. She must wait for the next. A sensation similar to the feeling she always had when bathing before she took the first plunge seized her, and she crossed herself. The familiar gesture brought back a whole series of memories of when she was a girl and of her childhood, and suddenly the darkness that had enveloped everything for her lifted, and for an instant life glowed before her with all its past joys. But she did not take her eyes off the wheels of the approaching second truck. And exactly at the moment when the space between the wheels drew level with her, she threw aside the red bag, and drawing her head down between her shoulders, dropped on her hands under the truck, and with a light movement, as though she would rise again at once, sank onto her knees. At the same instant, she became horror-struck at what she was doing. She tried to get up to throw herself back, but something huge and relentless struck her on the head and dragged her down on her back. A little peasant muttering something was working at the rails. And the candle by which she had been reading the book filled with trouble and deceit, sorrow and evil, flared up with a brighter light, illuminating for her everything that before had been shrouded in darkness, flickered, grew dim, and went out forever.